If you love the Mixing Music Podcast but want deeper, ad-free, technical episodes, we've got you covered. Our Patreon gives you access to over 250 exclusive episodes and new content every single week, all focused on mixing, mastering, and engineering at a high level. For just $4 a month, you get practical tips and techniques that will instantly improve your sound. Join now at MixingMusicPodcast.com/exclusive. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host Lou, the Solution.
I could see it in your eyes when you're like, "What the fuck does that say?"
Yeah, I was trying to. And today we have a very, very special guest. We have on our show today an amazing mastering engineer, as well as an incredible CEO and programmer from Natural Audio, Andrew Reinhard. Welcome to the show.
All right, thank you. You gotta practice your Bruce Buffer voice. I love. Yeah. I've wanted to be an announcer at one point in my life. Actually, I think that would be fun.
I think
that's going to be one of those things where anytime somebody sees it on a resume, they're going to look and be like, "Let me hear it."
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, one of the funniest things I've ever gotten on the podcast is I have a very naturally high voice, and there's someone that texted me or emailed me or responded through the podcast, contacted me some way, and they're like, "Hey, thanks for standing up and being confident for all the high-pitched voices out there, high-pitched males."
You're
out
like,
here.
Oh,
I was like, "Hey, thank you."
You know, like, I don't know if I actually appreciate this.
Yeah, is that a compliment or
no?
I can't tell right now.
You got to be confident in who you are. You love who
exactly,
you are.
So. Exactly. That's so funny. Anyway, welcome to the show, Andrew. We're very excited to have you on. Congratulations on all of your success and how much the audio community has welcomed and has been loving the new AL1 limiter that you've made recently. It's been out for how long now?
That's a tricky question because I started developing it over a year ago now.
Alpha, yeah. When did Alpha come out?
Alpha, God.
I want to say 6 months.
It was definitely, people had it sometime around this time last year, for sure. It was a very, very, very small group of people, but it got into the hands of pretty important people really quick. And just word kind of got about. So it's kind of a moving target when I say when it came out, but officially, we launched roughly 3 months ago, I'd say.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations on all of its success so far and to many more years of success. But today's episode, Andrew, is we're going to talk about, for everybody listening today, we're going to talk about limiters. Now, we've talked about limiters in the past, but Andrew is a nerd, just like we all are, right? Lou and I are also nerds, and we're going to talk about...
Proud of it.
Yeah, proud nerds. And we're going to talk about some practical things about limiters and how you use them in a mix, how you use them in mastering. And we're going to start off with this. Andrew, is there a difference between a compressor with a very high ratio, right? Like a Fab Filter C, right? The C2 or C3 or whatever it is, versus a brick wall limiter that we typically see in mix bus or mastering?
The short answer is yes. Brick wall is just basically guaranteeing. It's saying, we promise you it will never go over 0 dBFS or whatever your ceiling is if that developer gives you the option to set the ceiling. Now, you could have a ratio that's really high, but an attack that's slow, and it would be like everything is getting through, right? Because it's not attacking the immediate transients, and those transients are getting through. Or you could have a really high ratio and the attack is fast, and it's very much, it can be brick wall for practical intents and purposes, right? Like, it may not be designed to promise it, but in practice, it could very, it might as well be if you wanted it to be. So, you know, the line is a bit blurred, but I would say if you get pretty pedantic about it, it's just that brick wall has algorithmically a way to guarantee that you will never go over this no matter what you do. Whereas if you have the right attack timings and the right ratios that are really high enough, at least, you might as well call it brick wall to a degree, because it's just not, you know, the real practical implications around getting it to go 0.1 over or whatever is just, you know, it's just not going to meet all those conditions potentially. So there's definitely a difference. It's just a matter of, you know, what you're looking to get out of it. Do you really need to guarantee you're never going to go over something if it's on a drum bus? You know, the brick wall was really invented for mastering, or at least at the very least for streaming and the digital realm, on the digital world, where it's just like, yeah, we cannot go over 0 dBFS because it will clip.
Yeah.
Now, forgive me for, the thing that naturally comes to mind is that I've seen some limiters have different attack and release times, you know, like even the L2 from FabFilter has, it doesn't say the specific number if I'm not mistaken. And then the AL1 has like a program dependent attack and release time with like 32 milliseconds. Like if I were to do a 32 millisecond limiter compressor on a drum bus, there would be some, what do you call those, overshoots or transients that would be let through during that small amount of time. I'm wondering, so there is some sort of programming in a limiter that has a variable attack time. Like what does that attack time difference do, that slower attack time do for a limiter versus a different, like a
compressor? Well, it's a good question because it comes up often, and it's going to depend on each developer. I cannot speak for all of them, but I can say that there are a number of ways. You got to remember, like when you're talking about algorithms, and especially in the digital world, this is all just made up, like monopoly money. Like if you're into stocks or you're into anything, crypto, whatever your fun is outside of music, you'll realize real quickly that all of it is just made up off of like just random ideas, and people decided to standardize on them. And so there's a couple schools of thought around this that I've discovered. You could follow up the limiter with a clipper. In fact, some limiters have clippers in them that you don't know about, because you're right, 34 milliseconds is not fast enough to guarantee capturing every transient possible, right? So you need a way to make sure, if you're going to be, you know, a limiter for the digital world, guaranteeing that you're brick walled, you need a way to make sure that it's going to catch that. So if it's not fast enough to catch that, they might throw a clipper on at the end after that. And attack is very much what it means in the compression world as well. It's just that they need to do things to make sure that it's not going over 0 dBFS. If it's a limiter, that is going to guarantee some ceiling, and typically 99% of limiters guarantee a ceiling. So it's, if you ask me, it's really just like a, it's really just a tool that gives you sonic sculpting capabilities, but they, at the end of the day, they're not doing any magic necessarily to make sure you're not going over 0 dBFS. They're just going to throw a clipper on there. Or like in the case of what we do is we just basically say, okay, this is where you want the attack and release to kind of generally work, but we might speed it up or slow it down depending, to make sure that we guarantee that you're not getting any overs. So it's all just made up. And that's the beauty about this, is it's very, like DSP is very creative in the same way that, you know, mixing, you have your standard tools. You have delays, and you have time-based effects rather, or you have, you know, distortions and compression and EQ. But the way you put them together is really what makes your style. And it's very much the same way in the DSP world as well. So I can't speak for everyone, but those are the few ways that I am aware of as to how attack times work. It's very much, it's just the same attack that you would imagine with compression. It's just they have to have some way to make sure that they're not going over zero dBFS to call themselves a limiter.
That's fascinating. I didn't realize that there was, I never really considered the nuance on the flexibility from the developer's end.
Yeah.
Right? Of like, because now you're making it sound like that every plugin, I mean, I assume there's a lot of like, what do you call that? Like behind the scenes information that is kind of kept close to the chest that is part of the secret of the sound.
Yeah.
So there's no like baseline, okay, here's the logic that we're using when we're coding this plugin. That's fascinating. I didn't realize
there can
that.
Be. And that very, I mean, there very well could be plugin companies that are using that baseline technology, right? And they're just looking to not innovate, but that's not my approach. And I'm not going to say anyone in particular who might be doing that, but you know, if it works, it works. At the end of the day, I'm a big fan of just kind of like, if it sounds good, then it is good. You know, like who cares if it was made with some DSP by this way or that way, to a degree. But I do tend to believe strongly that the more basic algorithms that are out there, they're just, we've heard them before. Maybe they were great at some point, but me personally, I want to create DSP that's unique and I'm using my mind and my creativity to just solve the problem in a way that I think would be better. So yeah, I think that's the problem. That's the struggle of DSP and design work, is that people don't realize there's actually a ton of creativity that goes into just, right? Because if anyone knows anything about code, it's just a bunch of logic. And you have a problem statement in front of you. Do not let anything go over zero dBFS. It's a blank canvas at that point, right? You can go about making that happen any way that you can possibly imagine. But is it musical? Is the other part of this that gets really, really difficult. Because yeah, you can solve that problem, but is it going, come here. Oh. There you go. Sorry, my dog is over here.
Nice.
She's got a thing stuck around her. Is it musical? Is it CPU efficient? Like, you know, is it bug free? There's so much that goes into this process that I think just kind of just goes unappreciated, frankly.
Yeah, that actually does make a lot of sense. I never realized. I thought it was just like, in my mind, in my very dumb mind, I was like, okay, programming is, coding is a lot of like, okay, we got Lego pieces over here. How are we going to put the Lego pieces together in a unique way? But like, you're making it say like, oh no, it's more like cooking. Like we're like, there's different infinite amount of ingredients and I can do whatever I want. And I can even make new things.
It's like manufacturing the Legos.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So that may also explain why that there's just so many different limiters and why engineers have so many different limiters, because now we kind of understand the depth of like each one is different. Even if it has the same sort of parameters, it's very easy to see that each one has proprietary, you know, coding.
Differences.
Yeah. Even philosophies.
Yeah.
Right?
Hugely.
One that always comes to mind is I remember when the FGX came out from Slate. We're talking, what, 10 years ago? There was something about it where I'm like, okay, I know it's a limiter, but for some reason it just sounds so wildly different. It was probably the one limiter that it was really hyped up by a lot of people. I just couldn't get behind it. Like the sound of it just was something that wasn't personally favorable, but you know, there was still plenty of people that liked it. And that just goes right back to the whole, like, listen, it may have been coded with a specific intent, with a certain sound in mind, and people probably really gravitated to it. But then that's why we have so many different limiters, because there's a few people out there kind of like me where just, hey, you know, this one just didn't float my boat as much. You know, I'm looking for something else.
Yeah.
But its main job is for the lack of a want to oversimplify it, is the same job. It's just a whole different mindset that went into its development, a whole different goal that went into it, but the job is identical.
Yeah, it's kind of like when, you know, EVs started coming out. People had this problem with them, like still getting me from point A to point B, and you can argue the whole taking care of the world portion of it, which is very, very true. But at the end of the day, it just gets you from point A to point B, and there's just a different philosophy around it. And there's pros and cons to either one. And that's why I'm not a big proponent of anything being the end all be all for pretty much anything in life. So that's why we have so many limiters to choose from. At least in the case of myself, it's just an expression of what I wanted to hear. And I happen to know how to code, so I made it. So I think I was able to push it probably to a degree that, like, if you were, yeah, I mix and I master and I hire someone to go do it, it's kind of like a translator. Like, there's this, it's a very rig. It's, you know, you don't quite get the words out how you want it. So I've been very fortunate to be able to just say, okay, I have a sound in my head. And not only am I just like mastering with EQ and this and that to make that happen, now I have the skill set to go and create a tool that does what I want it to do. And that's literally what any of this is. I mean, that's all the compressors we love. The people just wanted to hear something different. And let's face it, we're all just on this rock to entertain ourselves until we die. And it's fun. It's fun making these things.
That's a funny way of putting it.
It's not the first time I've heard it, but every time I hear it, it cracks me up, because the unfortunate truth is, listen, man, we work in a what I like to call a selfish industry. Nobody joins this industry for the riches at first. It's completely out of selfish desire. And they're, you know, we figure it out. We find a way to make it work, right? But the only reason we figured out how to make it work is because we refuse to do anything else. We're just I like this one a little too much to just walk away from it. So I'm going to figure out. At first, it wasn't for the money, but now there just has to be a financial component to it just so I can keep having fun.
You know, because I have to do this silly thing called eat and have a place to live. Yeah, right.
You know, I did this thing called breeding. Reading, I think it's called. I had three kids. Sorry, guys. I'm the only one without kids on this podcast.
Yeah, loser, get some kids.
You know what's funny is I'm in a group chat with people, somebody put, "Happy Father's Day to all of you that have kids, and for those that don't, keep fucking, eventually." That's so funny. I read that, I was like, yeah, there's hope.
That's funny. Okay, Andrew, so then I want to ask you from your perspective, which is both mastery engineer and programmer. I mean, what are some of the trade-offs that you have to consider when building a limiter, or like when thinking about audio, even when it comes to, even if you want to extrapolate and expand into like when deciding what plugin to use in a session, right? Like, sure. What are some of the things that you're considering and usually considered to be trade-offs?
So I'm a big fan of articulation and punch and transients and dynamics. I also happen to be a fan of loud, when appropriate, of course. So I'm going to give the obvious answer and say I want it all, and which is why I wanted to go and see if I can get it all with the AL1. And I think that to a large degree, I accomplished what I was after, but there is just what I call essential complexity. If for anyone that's ever done any kind of extended mathematics, like differential equations, you see these crazy equations, like this is the simplified version of Schrodinger's equation. And you're just like, yeah, but it still looks like hieroglyphics, but it's simplified. Right? Because the fundamental thing that it's explaining is just fundamentally complex. And when you're talking about taking audio, and the human mind and brain are extremely good at nuanced listening and hearing and picking up on things, and you're telling me I need to be able to limit 10, 6 dB and have a person not hear a difference? That's a very, very, very tall ask. And so there's trade-offs, right? Look-ahead limiting came along, and it traded, in my opinion, transients and punch for harmonic distortion. We were able to get louder with less harmonic distortion. Well, that is a trade-off in and of itself that I did not really, really like. And so I wanted to go and figure out how we can have less distortion and transients and this and that. But at the same time, to address your question, is it actually appropriate to have something sound a little more smoother? And is look ahead actually beneficial in this particular case because it's smoothing something out? Because maybe this kick is wildly uncontrolled and I actually find that this is a tool to help me. And I think that that's the key thing is we have to think of these things as tools. And when we get into damn near gang wars over plugins, I mean, I've had people in my DMs threatening me. You don't know who you're fucking with. I'm like, oh, Lord, this is just, it's plugins. Come on, guys. Like, at the end of the day.
Hold on. Wait, what?
No. So, unfortunately, Ryan, I am so sorry to say this. You are not the first person I've heard this from. And I thought they were joking the first time. And now I have a friend to apologize to.
Yeah, it's true, man. People, they take this shit serious. They love their plugins. They are, you know, we're humans. We're tribal. We're kind of tribalistic, right? It's just a big world of gangs and whether you're, you know, anyways, the point is that
we're cliques.
We're cliquey and especially in the music industry. And so, I think that's just not the right way to serve art. The right way to serve art is to put your ego aside and ask yourself, what is the right tool to get this job done? Because at the end of the day, we're in the service industry. It's not about me loving FabFilter or loving Slate Digital. It's about making sure that this person who is putting everything on the line, like this is their baby. This is their emotion. They've invested in this. Am I doing it justice, you know, or am I just sitting here trying to prove to myself that, you know, this is the best plugin ever? I don't care if the AO1 is necessarily the best plugin or the worst plugin. All I know is it helps me in my job, and that's all I care about because I'm here to serve. I'm here to just do my best. And so to answer your question, which I totally fucking forgot at this point, but I believe it's just along the lines of, you know, find the tool that works and there is, you know, you're going to hear me say this over and over in this podcast. There is no right answer. That's the beautiful thing about this. And I think this is kind of my mission with what I'm trying to do in the audio industry, because I'm coming back into the audio industry and I'm just seeing it as so toxic. Sorry if I'm getting off topic at this point, but it's a good segue for me. Like, it's so toxic seeing how people have been either in love with the AO1 or they literally want to find me and physically harm me. It's just like,
I'm a little confused. I don't know. Why do people have...
In the world, they are extreme Redditors. Like, I don't know. Like, the thing that it's making me think of is, like, the guy that got kicked off of a Reddit mod position for, I forget, it's basically, like, a streamer platform. He got so upset, he started making YouTube videos directly to the CEO of Reddit, calling him out, saying, like, you should have protected us, this and that. Like, they feel so entitled that...
They do.
What I think the people going after Andrew is basically saying... Yo, how dare you speak on this thing in such a light? Like, I feel entitled to actually now defend it and make sure its honor is protected. It's like, dude, it's a piece of software. It has no feelings. People so far gone that they're going after the wrong person for the wrong reason.
Okay, hold on. Pause. Okay, just so we understand what's happening here, that there is people that are viscerally upset from the existence of this plugin, or did you say something philosophical about audio?
They're upset about the existence of this plugin. They think that I'm going out here and spending all this money on marketing when the reality is we maybe spent a total of 20 grand on marketing in the last year. It's just all organic. You know,
as somebody who was part of the beta, like, I can say that in that group, like, a lot of I saw a lot of the behind the scenes, like communication, development, how things were updated and things like that. There was a lot of time spent listening to the community. And I think that's what kind of helped it a lot. But I think the same way that you're saying, like, the accusation is the marketing push. I've also been in the conversation with a lot of higher up people in our industry where we do admit to each other, like, hey, sometimes having, you know, artist presets, engineer presets and all that is just a form of marketing. And people see 100%. That and that then it instantly clicks that in their head, at least it makes sense to them from an outside view, somebody who didn't see it saying, well, you know, the only reason they're associated is because they got a bag. Yeah. And it's like, no, they actually were speaking up during its development. Like a lot of the people you're accusing from just being a plug were actually those that spoke up in its development timeframe.
Yep, absolutely. Like we got Tizio and Baines on the team, and my whole approach is finding people who I think are intelligent people and are in the industry and actually giving them some kind of function and purpose within the company to help push the company forward. Mm-hmm. And they actually get something in return. Like let's look at what other companies are doing. They're hiring you. They're paying your daily rate. Coming to your house, stomping their dirty ass shoes all over your studio, and then they're saying, "Yeah, we're going to use your name and likeness to make potentially $500,000 on this plugin." Thanks.
Yeah.
You know, my whole goal is I want to give back. I want to share in the spoils, if you will, mm-hmm. with the people that are boots on the ground making this stuff happen. And so, yeah, I don't know, man. It's the plugin industry and the music industry right now as a whole, I absolutely love music, but I just think we need to come together and stop all this negativity and fighting, because really it's not between us. It's us and the record labels and AI and things like this that are threatening to really take it away.
And maybe this is just me being hyper naive, and I don't want to spend too much more time on this. But what are people against? Like the philosophy of your approach, or is it like the people that you have on the team, or like what specifically can someone get? I'm just not fathoming. Again, I'm naive here.
I think it's hard to fathom because it's so. It's fucking strange. I mean, it's weird. I mean,
see, and I was gonna say it's like trying to justify racism at a certain point where it's, and I'm not saying it's the same. It's just like, listen, man, if you're trying to get in the mindset of somebody with really stupid,
it's hard.
Like you're just hurting yourself in the process. Like you don't have to sit there and try to justify their thoughts because there's no justification for it.
Right.
Yeah, I just think they feel like we're coming in and buying our way in, and I think and to be fair,
I see.
Yeah, to be fair, I think that is arguably okay to be upset with because there are VCs and there are people with suits on coming in trying to figure out how they can. Because trust me, I come from a business to business. I just sold my first company.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. These people, they only care about money. And when they come into an industry, they usually rip it apart. So I could see and I appreciate wanting to protect something that you love. The thing that kind of racks my brain is I don't know how to convince them and show them the everything I went through, like my whole story is about music. I owe everything to music. Everything I went through to get to this point. And I think that, I think the industry is just kind of tired. I think they're just tired of being, you know, lied to, marketed to, and we just want something genuine to come along. And, you know, maybe this is just a product of years and years of plugging companies, creating garbage and forcing it down people's throats and saying, this is the best we can do.
Well, my only suggestion to that is do exactly what you've been doing, which is, I think when we meet new people in our lives, just genuinely speaking, just meeting people, right? We tend to have assumptions about them until we're disproven, right? So just lead by example. Keep doing what you've been doing, because I've seen what you did behind the scenes before its actual release. And now that we've had our conversations where I even tried to, you know, giving you some info like, hey, maybe consider this, consider that, whatever. And you've always been very receptive, communicate very well with people. So I think if people got an opportunity to actually see more of that from you, and I, you know, doing these interviews and podcasts and all that kind of stuff that I've seen you doing is feeding that, right? They see that you're human and you're just somebody that's out here doing that. They'll eventually come around. But at first, they just don't know who you are, what you're about. And I think it's natural for people to feel defensive when a new player comes into the field.
Fair enough.
Hate turns followers into subscribers. I want to.
Speaking of that, plug in the podcast. If you'd like to subscribe for.
Yeah, you hate us? That's awesome. We have haters too, actually.
I'm going to bring you lots of subscribers.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, you should like us because.
I got some haters.
Going back into limiters here and talking about limiters, there's a lot of other things that we want to talk about. Real quick, there's. A little brief story here. We're going to do a podcast episode on it later, Lou. But what is this guy's name that I sent you before?
Are you talking about the videos?
There's a guy on YouTube. His name is Jim Lil.
The preamp dude?
Jim Lil, who has made videos about preamps and distortion, and then his one from a couple years ago, which is about microphones and where the tone from a microphone goes. I'm not going to talk about those episodes.
He also did pickups.
Right. He's done a bunch of things with guitars too, like the tone of a cap. Anyway, the point is not those videos. We're going to talk about that on a different episode. The point that I'm trying to make is this mysticism surrounding our audio, around audio and exactly what you're talking about, the psychology of the in-group keeping and wanting to believe something, the illusion of control and, you know, going around our cognitive biases and, anyway, it's just fascinating to me, but it's also very refreshing to hear someone that is coding and participating in the industry straight up be like, yeah, this is just a different offering based on what I wanted, you know, which is really nice, honestly.
I don't know how much you want to touch on this, but I think it's something I just keep wanting drilling home is that, that whole thing you just talked about, like you go into the hi-fi world and people swear they hear differences from whether Wi-Fi is on or not. And I'm okay with that. Like have fun with it. Have fun with it. But at the end of the day, when are we like not listening to music or not emotionally connecting with what we're listening to? We're so focused on, is that a FET compressor? Is that a digital EQ? Did you use that? Did you use this? You know, like, no, how does it make you feel? Like, sometimes I give lessons to people about, you know, how to master and this and that. And I just tell them, turn some knobs until you feel it. And you know, it sounds so ridiculous, but like, I don't listen with my ears anymore. I listen with my heart. Like, that sounds hippy dippy. I understand it. But at the end of the day, like if this song sounds sick as fuck because the bass is earth rattling and that's what gives me chills up my spine, but it's not technically balanced, then that's the right way to go. And I think that that's what we need to connect with more and more with music is instead of tearing each other down and trying to say, well, I would have done this and that, like, dude, just enjoy the music. Like,
absolutely. Yeah. It's kind of funny. Cause, I'll make it quick because it's left field, but it's not, cause it's direct with the idea, which is, in live sound. Cause I've been doing a lot of live ever since, we closed down in the mix. I got picked up to work with a couple artists doing a bunch of lives. So being that I already had that experience, I'm like, sure, whatever, you know, it's another bag, but, something that I keep finding and running into, like we just did roughly 30 shows in Europe, and every other venue had an entire Rupert Neve rack, MBP, 5045s, the EQs, compressors, blah, blah, blah. You name it, it's there. And we're watching as these dudes are, you know, doing like one dB push on the top end, you know, a little bit of whatever. So these guys are telling me, they're like, oh, no, you can absolutely hear the difference. And as for us engineers, you sure there's a thing you can hear, right? Mm-hmm. Then they walk over to my setup. Granted, my setup is most times more expensive than theirs, but it's completely for what we'll call Pro Tools stock. Right. Mm-hmm. It's just whatever comes with the board, some wireless in-ears, some wireless mics, call it a day. We're using great mics, you know, great sound sources and all that kind of stuff. The drummer knows how to tune his drum kit, which is always the biggest issue. But they're like, hey, can I listen to the in-ears? And they're like, how did you get it to sound so good? I'm like, I didn't overthink it. We have emulations of distressors on my board, 160Xs, 160VUs. We have LA2As, 1176s. We have, you know, a bunch of emulations, but then they see me just using the stock ones and they're like, why don't you use this? Why don't you use that? I'm like, it sounds good already, dude. You said it yourself once you put
you
the
literally
layers
just
on,
said, like, how did you get it sounding so good? And then you're questioning, like,
yeah, yeah, we you have might this have fascination. This 20,000 rack of hardware, but you forgot that they're performing. They don't care if there's just a little too much of 200 hertz if it feels right. Not only that, but we're also in a different environment. I'm gonna give the environment spiel, which is like, look, they're on stage, you're in the crowd. It's two different things. One's in-ears versus pressure on stage from the speakers. Another one is not wearing in-ears and pressure from the speakers. But overall, if you were to listen to the mix isolated off stage, it probably sounds like shit because there's no bleed that you're working with and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, they need to feel good when they're performing. So when they listen back to their records, when you send it back to them, even in the studio, they want to feel good. So if it doesn't feel good, then it doesn't matter what tools you have, where you are, what speakers you're listening to on, what headphones you're listening to on. It just doesn't feel good. So we can always debate which plugin is the best, which headphones are the best, which monitors are the best, which converter is the best. But one thing that is always going to be right is when the record was worked on off of feel, not off of numbers.
Exactly.
Talking about monitors are the best. Just a small aside.
Strauss?
I think we're all Strauss boys.
We're all Strauss brothers.
Yeah. What's up, baby?
Okay, let's get into this next section here. I want to talk about...
Also, I don't know if I like being called one of the Strauss boys. That sounds like a boy band.
Oh, well, actually...
Does it feel good?
I want to talk about a small little point here. This might go into... the mysticism surrounding it. There's been some talk about true peak limiting versus allowing limiters to go have some intersample distortion, intersample peaks, right? On your AO1 plugin, I noticed that there is no like Ozone has like that true peak option. A lot of these limiters have that true peak option. Yours doesn't, but it does have an oversampling. Like in this debate of oversampling versus true peak and whatnot, what are kind of what your personal beliefs are in all of that?
Yeah. By the way, the next version of the L1 will have true peak. It's in our alpha right now. So.
Like, why was that considered? I want you to talk about your thought.
Really? I mean, because, okay, I have my personal opinions, but making a product for the world is an entirely different thing.
Right.
And this is where business strategy and experience comes in, where I, to answer your first question, I don't love true peak limiting. It doesn't feel good to me. Are there places where you need to be, for conformance reasons, you need to have true peak? Yes, because there are literal, like, money you will lose if it's not true peak limited because of whatever broadcasting standards that you have to adhere to. If you have to use it under those cases, by all means, use it. If you like the sound of true peak limiting, by all means, use it. I personally don't enjoy the sound of true peak. That being said, I do think I have a really great implementation of true peak coming, and I don't mind it. I still think that I don't personally enjoy true peak limiting. I've never heard true peak overs actually in practice affect distortion, or there And even if the distortion is there, I don't notice it. So to me, you're going to hear me with this admitted cop out of like, if it sounds good, it is good. And I could pretty much throw that answer to anything that you ask me today, but I will give my opinion on it. But ultimately, I do think we need to like have that center, that gravity point to pull back to. But my personal opinion, I don't like it. And I added it because I understand that there's conformance reasons. And if I wanted to be super business, if I'm just being a businessman, how are we going to get into the broadcast world? And how are we going to make, how are we going to have, we're going to, it's a totally untapped market for us if I don't just add true peak limiting. And am I going to let my ego and my own personal opinions and what I, one measly little human on this massive earth, limit how much money we can make so that my employees can go and buy houses and take care of their kids? I would be a complete asshole if I did that. So I have my opinions on it. And ultimately, I just want to give a tool that either you're adhering to it for conformance reasons or you like the sound of it. I'll give my damnedest to make the best sounding DSP possible, even if it is true peak. And I'll go to the end of the earth to make it sound as good as I know how to make it sound. But I won't use it probably. But, you know, that doesn't mean that I shouldn't do it because for the reasons I spoke of.
It's so funny. You did the one unspoken cardinal sin of audio engineers that I am such, what is it called? Like in, I do this all the time and I'm surprised you did it too. You admitted that you can't hear a specific thing. It's like, there's like, you can't tell with the overs and stuff. It's like 1 dB ever for like two samples, you know?
Yeah. And people are going to, yeah.
I was wondering what the cardinal sin was because I was hold on. I got to hear this.
Little anecdote. Yeah. I remember, I'm not going to say the name. I remember being in a like world-renowned mixer's room, and his room is also world-renowned, has been emulated. And we were, there's about 15 engineers listening to specific things. I'm not going to say the techniques that were supposed to change the sound of the audio, but it was like in some like mysticism kind of mystical way, not like in like a traditional use of a plugin. Anyway, 15 to 20 people surrounding, I think, you know, I think you may have been there, Lou.
I might have been.
15 to 20 people, maybe you weren't there because maybe that's better for the story because I'm about to say I was the only one that said, I don't think I hear anything. I don't know. Maybe there is something happening, but I don't think I hear anything. It's too close for me to be certain of any kind. And then like out of like the 15 or 20 people, I was the only one who admitted it. There was some like social, you know, some social thing going on where people didn't want to look like they didn't know or like they wanted to, you know, kind of brown nose or suck up to the guy who was certain that something was happening. I'm not sure, but there is like this funny thing where there is like this some form of ego for an engineer tied to an ability to hear something where in actuality, like actuality, it's like
golden ears. I got golden ears.
I remember the first time I ran into something like that was roughly like 13 years ago. It was back when, so there was a studio called American Recording. This is different from Paramount's partner studio, Americayan, or I forget how you pronounce it, out in the valley. But American is no longer here. They were responsible for recording the national anthem and things of that nature. They were one of the very, very few studios in America with the Trident A range. I remember being in a session where the owners are there, and there's like five of their engineers. They're working on this big record. Everybody has some association to it. And, you know, I'm just sitting in the room, and because I was kind of like one of the producer's personal engineer, I was just kind of like drum program alignments and all that kind of stuff, you know, just doing assistant engineer kind of shit. But in the room, everybody's like, oh, yeah, that sounds great. That sounds great, blah, blah. And one of the younger dudes just looks up and he looks kind of confused. And he's like, he taps the engineer's shoulder. He's like, hey, man, do you guys not hear it distorting? Like, do you guys just not hear that? And they just kind of like looked up and they listened to it. All of a sudden, the entire room was like, oh yeah, it's distorting now. It's distorting now. It's like, it looked like a bunch of fucking seagulls from Finding Nemo, where they all get distracted and then they're like, moi? You know, it's just, there is this, unfortunate thing that you will find in any room. I think it happens anytime where a lot of people want to earn each other's respect or maintain a certain amount of respect where, I think behind closed doors, we all admit it to ourselves that some things either sound good to us, don't sound good, or we just don't hear it. But I think it's hard to say it out loud in a room, which I think is why it's appreciated when we hear it out loud, because it shows a level of at least honest integrity.
I'll tell you what, I've gotten to talk to some of the top engineers in the world, and I can tell you every single one of us are suffering from imposter syndrome. And there's this, is this, like, you know, D's right. There is this sort of egotistical, I got golden ears thing that, like, man, just admit that you don't know. 'Cause I guarantee you, you're going to learn more
by saying
you don't know than by pretending that you do, you know? And if you're truly in this to want to learn, And I'll say this for any craft, by the way, I got this from martial arts. You know, I remember, like, in jiu-jitsu, there's this nerdy guy, 130 pounds, dripping wet, turned me into a pretzel, you know, and you're just sitting here, this egotistical, you know, whatever, you know, I lift weights, blah, blah, blah. And that's when I learned my lesson that you don't know what you don't know. And it's okay to not know it, because eventually you will learn if you just put that aside. Yourself is going to be your biggest blocker in anything in life. Not other people, not circumstances, yourself, your brain, your belief in yourself, your ego. The sooner you put that all aside, the quicker you will have, quote unquote, golden ears, because you're going to be able to learn, you know? So for anyone listening, I just, you know, I don't want, again, one of my goals in the music industry and getting involved within it again is to just try my best to undo a lot of the damage that has been done with, there's just so much misinformation out there when it comes to music. And if I could let anyone know, it's just like, yeah, don't be afraid to not know something, because honestly, that's the best. That's, you're probably in a better place, because as they say, you can learn bad habits. You can unlearning something is harder than it is admitting that you don't know something and then learning a good way to do something.
Right. And yeah. I myself am a perpetrator of this, because that's so easy to say. And I hear that, I'm like, oh yeah, duh. But then I always catch myself saying some bullshit. I'm like, why the, if I give any thought to myself afterwards, I'm like, why did I even? Anyway, well, let's move on to more about limiters here. I wanted to talk a little bit about, well, briefly here. The fun thing about music is that there is mixes and masters, and the things that we do are subjective. But if we were to say they were 100% subjective, that would also be incorrect. There is some objectivity. There are good mixes, right? And it's very paradoxical by nature. And that's the fun part of it for me, as someone that just revels in, loves ambiguity in a non-naturally human way, honestly.
You're in the perfect place.
Yeah, dude, I love it. I want to talk about, like, so one of the few ways to have, and we need, like, nerds and people that can only think in the objective hi-fi kind of mindset in order to push boundaries, in order for the subjective people that are all about feelings to be able to take advantage of that as a use case, right? And so it's kind of this fun blend of, like, it's not just one. But anyway, I want to talk about what I did, and when I downloaded AL1 a month ago, is I was like, all right, I've heard these can be subtle. So what I did is I put a different limiter that will not be named that I typically use. And then I tried it again in AB, you know, that's one of the ways to compare, to hear what's going on. And there's a few things that I noticed that the AL1 does really well, that this other limiter that I've tested before and I've used before that doesn't do as well, that is different from a third limiter that I use this for, which is low end retention. What kind of magic? I mean, maybe we don't want to get overly technical with what specifically you're doing, but like, like low end retention on, I thought that was just something I would have to give up. You did some magic there.
Right. That's kind of, I've always looked at mastering and limiting choice as a choice of compromise. And and really, if you think about getting loud, it really is a choice of, well, again, this is also subjective, but it is a choice of compromise if you are a person who likes dynamics to any degree, right? You're going to have to sacrifice some dynamics to get loud. You're going to have to sacrifice some low end to get loud, and which is, you know, AO1 is no magic bullet. It'll get you further, in my humble opinion. But to answer your question, in my opinion, the problem is look ahead limiting. Look ahead limiting, what it does is it says, okay, we have a peak coming in X amount of time. We're going to start turning things down now so that by the time that that peak gets here, it's not going to be over the threshold. And if you just think about the cycle length of base, it's longer. It's going to take up more of that window. And so in essence, it's dominating. This is why they say low end is taking up all your headroom. It's because it's so massive. The wavelengths are long and it's taking up this whole window. And so really what you're ducking for that entire look ahead time is the bass, because what music doesn't have a shit ton of bass nowadays? It's usually, you know, if you look at a spectrogram, it's usually the thing that's the loudest of all of them. So you're really just ducking bass. Look ahead limiting, to my ears, sounds like radio broadcast ducking. It's just kind of like, it's just dipping out the low end, and we're just trading lower harmonic distortion for with this look ahead limiting for loudness.
Does look ahead limiting affect higher frequencies in the similar way that you're describing it affecting?
Of course it can. A little bit about detectors. Usually they all have some detection mechanism, right? So if the content is filled up with nothing but high end, then it's going to just kind of find like the least common denominator, so to speak, of which one is the most offending. What they generally do is they have envelopes that they draw kind of on top. You know, if you look at a waveform, it's spiky. They're not chasing after every one of those spikes. Otherwise, you'll get what's called audio rate distortion, where you're modulating the signal itself in a speed that is within the audible range. And so it creates these kind of like modulation AM sidebands and stuff like this. So what you do typically is you kind of generalize, you know, it's kind of like connecting the biggest peaks to the next big peak. This, you know, if you had to draw a general line, like the general envelope, and you use that as your detector, and then the thing reacting to it is trying to basically enforce taking that envelope and bringing it down 0 dBFS. And so really, it's just about whatever that detector is good at detecting or has maybe even a bias towards detecting, right? Because again, this is all just from the minds of somebody who had some idea, and they're just, you know, a lot of this is heuristics, right? It's just like, if this, then that, you know, if the signal goes up here, we're going to do this. And if this happens, it's just like this chain of like conditional statements of like, okay, well, when this scenario comes on, we're going to do this thing instead. And so it's really subjective to, you know, like how that implementation is done. But yeah, it absolutely could be, you know, because if we're just talking about that envelope approach, right, maybe that snare, which is predominantly, you know, low, mid and high, maybe that's the thing that brought the envelope up at that point, right? So, you know, it's hard to do any kind of blanket statement, but I would say more often than not, by a large margin, the bass is the thing kind of driving the limiter by and large. So that's just speaking from practical experience.
That's something that we've talked about before on the episodes too, is like, in at the risk of oversimplifying and being too reductionist here, but like, that's the thing with most limiters and like at the end stage of a mix or master is like, what are you willing to sacrifice with low end? Anyway. So I just really like the options that you have there because there's like three. I don't have it right in front of me.
No,
but you have like
fine.
The three modes that you have. And I've noticed I haven't really heard what specifically is going on, but like one has more low end, but is a little bit more floppy than mode two, which is tighter. And then mode three, mm-hmm. which seems to be somewhere in between alongside right. like different envelopes that you use, which quite frankly, the physics behind, because I know you have, from what I understand, you have a degree in physics from UC Santa Barbara. Is that correct?
I studied physics there. I went to college late in life and I had kids and I was in family housing. I ended up dropping out for a software job.
My point is still the same.
I don't have a degree, but I did a shit ton of math and I know a lot of physics. I got into like Dirac notation and like quantum mechanics. It's fun stuff.
Regardless, my point is the same, is that you've going back to our previous point, which is this is me admitting that I do not understand the physics of envelopes or what you said in the previous segment is beyond me. And it shouldn't be. Maybe I should look into it. But the point is, when going back and A-Bing with this other plugin and A-Bing within the plugin itself in its different settings, they're subtle, but they are noticeable differences. And I've really appreciated the flexibility of it all. By the way, if it's not too late, for anybody listening to the podcast, obviously this podcast is sponsored by Natural Audio and the AO1. You can honestly just go online and get, is it a 30-day free trial?
30-day free trial because 30? I'm strongly against noise and silence in plugins.
There you go.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes.
30-day free trial for any plugins right now, as well as listeners of the podcast, because it's cool to know DK and Lou. Your team, Javon, hooked us up with a 20% off discount for only the first week. After this episode drops, we're going to communicate when that's going to be. For the first week, there's going to be a 20% coupon code, and that coupon code is going to be MMPOD. MMPOD. Okay.
Not only that, but correct me if I'm wrong, I think you also have, in case the 20% off doesn't fully help somebody cover the cost of it, I believe you have like a monthly option too, right?
Where you can rent pay it off. Yep. And that discount will apply to rent to own as well.
Perfect.
Oh, sick. Cool.
Yeah. So worth mentioning.
The discount applying to rent to own is sweet. So otherwise, obviously, we wouldn't have invited you on. So to be clear for the listeners here, I reached out to y'all about wanting to do an episode because
So don't DM him saying he bought his way in, okay?
Yeah. Because I heard some stuff happening with this limiter that I've not really heard others doing. I mean, even something as simple as, and really useful, because this is something that I do quite often, that I have to use other plugins or equipment for, is upward mm-hmm. compression. Which is yours is optimization. Dude, quick anecdote. I rarely ever do film scores. Rarely ever do it. But I have a few friends that are composers that love working with me. And I had a 9-minute cue. And there was different parts in the cue. Some parts of silence, room for dialogue or whatever. Different cues, whatever. And again, I don't do film scores that often. I don't usually work with cues. I do pop music. But in this situation, it was super awesome because one of the notes that he said is, okay, I actually want less varying volume difference, less dynamics overall from the very, very quiet sections with like the string beds versus like the big moments. And I was about to start automating some bullshit, like do a bunch of squiggly lines in the DAW. And I was like, you know, fuck it. Let's just try this upward compression thing where it's like plus 4 dBs at the lowest point and you can set the threshold. And then he's like, oh yeah, this is perfect. It's the perfect. And I'm like, oh, I did nothing. Like, that was so awesome. I mean, then
thank
obviously.
Thank you, Andrew, for making us lazy.
That's my job.
I mean, it obviously works in the context of like pop music too, when you have like macro dynamics from section to section. Right. And that's something that I think about. I mean, we've all heard songs where you have to like in the car and you have to like turn up the volume when it gets to the bridge and you're like, oh, like that. Like there is some emotional stuff there, but I it's fun because I think you can leave some of that emotional retention from preserved dynamic, macro dynamics there, but also you don't need that much, you know, to have the same.
Yeah.
Sometimes, I don't know. There's that practical versus, I don't know. Anyway, it's really cool that that's just in there because that's something that I do use all the time that I like. That's fascinating. I want to talk about a little bit about that. Like, what is kind of your thought process and intention with leaving the optimization or like upward compression in there as part of this plugin?
I mean, I've never been a fan of upward compression. It sounded very bubbly, kind of bloated, pumpy, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I just was after, you know, one that sounded kind of clean and transparent. Actually, the way that I like to use that optimization section is I put the threshold at like minus 0.5. And then what I do is I basically split up that 0.5 of, and this is not technically headroom, but if I'm just imagining 0.5, minus 0.5 to 0 dBFS as the space that I want to work within, I'll put like lift at 0.25 and maybe the makeup at 0.25. And so that half a decibel where it's not, you know, where the loudness gets under minus 0.5, it's just kind of like bringing it up ever so slightly. It actually brings like a depth and 3D-ness to two things that is really, really cool. So there's so many ways that you could use it, and I hate to give prescriptions, and I'm not if you notice there's no presets in the one, which actually is coming in the next one because business, you know, and
yes,
you know,
yes.
Huh.
Yeah,
who knew this guy wanted to make some money?
You know, optimization, I called it that because compression kind of implies these timings that are a bit slow, where actually the optimizer in the AO1 is the limiter algorithm just used inversely. But in addition to it being used inversely, it's the limiter telling the optimizer, hey, I'm about to start limiting. You should start getting out of my way so that they don't fight each other. Yeah. And so what you get is like this kind of really clean, extremely like limiter precise lift. And that's why we call it lift. Instead of upwards compression. I think it's a really cool tool. Makeup Gain, by the way, is just on the release curve. So as the limiter is like on its release curve, it's going to try and bring up some of that gain back that it might have overshot. And that's the idea behind it. Because again, there is no perfect, you know, it's a lot of things are based on heuristics in the AO1. And it's like, okay, might have done too much. Let's try to bring some of it back. There's a ton of ways you could use it. And the way that you use it is actually the way that I originally thought how it might be used, because I was automating like, okay, I feel like the verse is a bit disconnected from the hook. It's like a freaking 3 dB jump.
Yeah.
I hate automating. If I can get away with it in a plugin, I will. So, the idea was exactly that, just like set the threshold to minus 12. Okay, that's when it's loud, when it's too quiet, and just bring it up 2 dB. And now it transitions and hands off to the hook a little bit more cleanly. And so that's one way to use it. Or you could just kind of like put the threshold at zero and just always crank it up. Just always, I want half a decibel of gain at all times when you can, when you're not limiting. You know, but again, it goes back to like just my whole approach with this, just get creative with it. Hell, I would love for people to say, oh, I use it this way. And it's like, oh man, I never thought of that. That's really, really cool. You know? But I would say that those are probably the three ways that I personally use it is, you know, the way that you mentioned D, and sometimes, you know, I get some rock music from Florida every now and then, and they like their stuff loud. And so I'll put it at zero and just turn it up. Or if I want something like with a little bit more punch, I'll just play around with putting it at minus 0.5 and splitting the difference between makeup and lift. There's, you know, there's all kinds of ways that you could use it. And, you know, in the next version, we might have some presets to kind of show how you might use those.
Right. Nice. Okay, there's two more topics I want to touch on before we close out on this episode.
Sure.
One is your philosophy behind clipping. And I'll talk a little bit about mine as well. I used to be deathly afraid of clipping and distortion. So I would even go ahead and make the ceiling less than 0.1. I'm finding myself to be okay with it. There was this really cool thing. I think it was Isotope that came out with a bunch of different graphs of like pop songs that are winning Grammys. And it'll be like, what is the true peak of this song? What was the LUFS of this song? It's like cool that you can see what these objectively high-streamed, award-winning songs are, you know? And like,
and some of them are a lot quieter than people think.
Yeah. And some of them are like really loud.
Some of them have true peak of like 2 dB as like well.
Yeah, exactly. Like plus two. And that was the craziest thing. Oh, man. Thing. Basically, getting over this like fear of it. I've also noticed that some of these limiters and some of the options that I have within my arsenal are built and coded in a way where I can hit like minus 10 dBs of gain reduction, and it obviously prioritizes less distortion. Right. So it's cleaner at minus 10 dBs. And there's some plugins that like you go past like minus four, it's like already audibly distorting or clipping in some various way. What is kind of your personal philosophy and with all that?
Yeah. I rarely clip. What's my personal philosophy? I wouldn't say there's necessarily a cookie cutter way that I think about it. The way I see clipping is I'm actually developing a clipper. So the one I use, it has a really nice aggression about it. And so when I feel like I need to get more aggressive, like an aggression out of this song, I will clip. Otherwise, I lean heavily on the limiter. And I would say that that's really as simple as my philosophy gets. Because I think clipping, it tends to take away this sort of like micro dynamic at the very tip top of things. It just kind of, well, it clips things off. It's literally in its name. It's just clipping off these things that give me this very subtle articulation that I'm a huge fan of personally. Mm-hmm. Now, you might get some music where that articulation, they just want that loud, and it actually sounds great loud because it actually gives me the chills when it's loud as shit. And it's just like, yes, this is supposed to be loud. Then I'll pull out a clipper as well. Again, I think it's just always trying to serve the song. And I sometimes misinterpret that. Like I got a song recently that was like, it just felt like I wanted to hear it loud. I wanted to hear it because it just made you want to feel proud about something, And I made the call to put this clipper on it, and it sounded aggressive, and I was vibing with it. And I sent it back to the client, and they're like, yeah, could we just make it a little less aggressive? Took off the clipper, and they're like, this is perfect. You know, so... Mm. I definitely think it's an aggression tool, and you might get it wrong. I'm not a fan of this idea of always clipping before limiting because it's going to make the limiter sound or work easier. If that's what you like to do, by all means, I don't think that that's wrong. It's just not how I want to approach it. Like I wanted to create a limiter that can handle whatever I throw at it. Within reason, and then work into the limiter when it comes to mastering. So yeah, I know that's a very long-winded answer, but you know, clipping is cool. I just don't love it for everything.
I think clipping is one of those things that I think you're right. Like a lot of people kind of struggle with it at a certain point. I think one of the mistakes that I found, I had somebody who, you know, asked for like a mixed critique. I asked him to open his session. And, the first thing I had noticed from him, I was like, yeah, like the drums sound like they're hitting hard, but they don't sound like they're hitting. And, when I asked him about his master bus chain, cause I noticed a very specific clipper that a lot of people use on the master bus, I asked him like, how come you're feeding into the clipper first? Like no critique on the order or anything, but just, once I saw what it was doing, I was like, why that? He's like, oh, I heard it makes the limiter work easier, just like how you just mentioned. I was like, yeah, but you're clipping like 8 decibels on your master bus. Like everything sounds distorted. And your one thing that you said that you're having a hard time with is clarity. And clipping is not clarity. It's more of a transient control. Like try just putting it on the individual source that you need clipped. But even then during summation, you're still going to get back some kind of dynamics. Like not everything's going to be flat. Even if you put it on every channel, the summation of the audio is going to create transients anyways. So, you know, it's kind of crazy that you brought that up because it is a very common issue that I've seen a lot of people not know. Like they try to work into a clipper forgetting that even if it doesn't technically redline, you're still technically redlining. That's what clipping is.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. This just touches on kind of again like this misinformation out there and like.
Yeah.
You know, you got to find what works for you. You got to find what you personally don't like. Come up with your own opinions. Come up like, do you think clipping before limiting sounds better? Fucking great. If that's what you like and that's your sound, I'll listen to your shit all day long as it sounds good, you know, and I like it and I fuck with the artist. Someone else, a competitor may get to a just as pleasing conclusion without it. Like, I don't really necessarily have a problem with the idea of clipping before limiting. It's just, I have a problem with,
the approach maybe.
I have a problem with prescriptions. Like, it's so, I think you need to go through these things. That's the sad thing about all this. Like, you know, I'm sure maybe you guys went through this, but like I made the mistake of buying a shit ton of really nice gear before I ever improved my monitoring. And everyone was telling me, you got to improve your monitoring first. You know, it's like that. You seen that meme where it's the Gaussian curve where the guy's kind of like, you know,
the midwit meme, the midwit meme. Yeah.
Midwit, man. I got to fucking remember that one. It's so appropriate, right? For music, because you kind of have to go through those mistakes to understand when limiting before clipping is actually appropriate or when it's not, right? You kind of have to. And the way that you can accelerate your learning is by allowing yourself to fail. Like try the limiting before clipping and be honest with yourself. Are you feeling it? No. Then try a completely different approach. Are you feeling that? No. Fucking chase it down until you figure it the fuck out and you figure out when that might be applicable. I'm just about, I think audio engineers, again, because it's the service industry, we need to be adaptable with adaptable? That's not even a word.
Adaptive.
Thank you. It's been, then we need to be adaptive and we need to be flexible, malleable. And we need to understand when to pull out different tricks from our bag in order to serve the content as best as possible. So again, I'm not against any particular technique or approach. I just think anytime you talk about anything in life, blanket statement, always, never, or you must, I think you should really consider that a red flag in life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I 100% agree. That's part of the major points of this podcast is to address the nuance. I really like your use of the word heuristics. You used it a couple times throughout this episode. For the listener, who that's not like an everyday word. A heuristic is a mental shortcut, rule of thumb used to solve problems to make a decision or learn something quickly when optimal or exact method is too complex or time consuming. My favorite heuristic, availability heuristic, but I mean things like trial and error, rule of thumb, process of elimination, right? These are all heuristics. That explains the basis of our industry. Like that's the last topic that I want to touch on is in an ideal world, every engineer would do what in this recent trendy video about preamps, Jim Lil did, which is go through the process of actually measuring everything with every single different thing instead of, you know, kind of using rules of thumbs or kind of like generalizing different things, right? And kind of eliminating a lot of the heavy process. Because now, okay, I'm getting a little bit too deep here, but as like I'm Japanese, and in Japan, the shokunin or the craftsmen of Japan are like famous. I think that's the right word. I'm not going to use infamous. Famous for not caring about diminishing returns. Like if it takes, if you can get 99% out of something with this much effort, Japanese, for whatever people, for whatever reason, honor and pride and prosperity, they will go the extra mile to do that 0.0001% that objectively has so little difference that it almost does anything, but it's not about it. It's about loving the craft so much, dedicating yourself to the craft so much that you're looking for those small little things. And so this is the last part that I want to talk about here is, some things are super duper small that aren't worth looking at, but something like a limiter is one of those things that is often forgot about, but like we kind of get into a habit of doing the thing that we've always been doing. And I would actually suggest, even if it's not the AL1, obviously I'm currently suggesting to demo the AL1 at the
I'll say it. Use whatever is... whoever's marketing wins you over and you like the look of it and sound of, use it.
Man, Steven Swain is right up there.
But the point that I'm trying to make here is that like there are times that at least once in your career, at least once every few years, you should take the time to step out of your routine and going into that really time-consuming, quite annoying, and maybe not productive process of going and A-being. Right. And I did this recently because of the AO1, and this is not necessarily specifically because of this specific plugin, but I heard that people really like this and I was like, okay, what is going on? So I went out of my way to A/B different limiters that I've had. Okay. What is the AL1 doing differently? And, you know, it doesn't even like at the very least, if it's not to like prove why it's superior, it's more like, what is it doing differently? And then I can decide from there.
You want to understand?
Do I like that difference? Right. And like we can hear then the trade offs and the costs of like what's going on, the process, even the workflow of how you've divided the sections. Do I like this workflow? The point is, in an ideal world, in every single mix session, we would take the time to go through all of our plugins to figure out which one is the right compressor for this drum kit, but that doesn't happen. And so what I'm suggesting with you is a lot of people forget, with the listener here, is a lot of people forget about the final limiter, and that's one of those things where maybe I'm suggesting that you take the time, you know, at least, you know, for the next year or two, like take the time to do another comparison of your limiters, kind of go through what the different sounds of each of your limiters are, and then use that information, retain that information for your use of how you use them for the next few years until you maybe go through and do another test again of current up-to-date limiters. And I think that, and I'm saying this sincerely, the AL1 is one of those contenders that you should definitely put in when you're making those comparisons. And I think it'll speak for itself. That's all I'm going to say. Is that fair?
Remember, it's Star Wars said it best. Only a Sith deals in absolutes.
Thanks, Lou.
I said we were nerds, and I said I was proud of it, so I'm not backing down.
No. Andrew, what do you think about what all I just said?
No, there's a lot of truth to it. I think at the end of the day, we need to stay curious. We need to stay trying to push the craft forward, but you also need to get shit done. So I'm a big fan of the 80-20 rule. You know, and I tell everyone at Natural Audio all the time that we can't let perfection be the enemy of good. And I know I'm using a bunch of cliche sayings, but there's always time to get better. And there's always time, like, get some things done. But to your point, like, always be trying to push your craft forward. Like, I've noticed one of the things about the people on our team, like, we have some Grammy winning engineers, and you would think that, oh, yeah, I have my template. I have my flow. I know how to do this, but they're always looking for that extra 1%, but they're also getting shit done at the same time. And I think that balance and the ability to know when to put on one hat and take off the other is just going to come down to experience. And you may not get there immediately, but just enjoy the journey. Like, right. I think that a problem in the American culture is we really glorify the end goal. I'm going to make my $1 million. I'm going to get that Grammy. But once you get there, you're just like, it was actually like, I remember having fun.
I'm
learning
still
about
depressed.
Limiters. Yeah. It's just like, enjoy
the
journey.
Maybe the friends we made along the way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, there's a ton of truth to it. It's just like, enjoy the process. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. Always try to push your craft forward and get shit done. And balance all that across each other and good luck. Because it's hard.
Right.
Right.
Well, that's so awesome. That is so awesome, Andrew. Thank you so much for joining our podcast episode. I had a lot of fun. We were able to fuck around, talk about all sorts of stuff. I think the listeners got an information buffet. Pick and choose what you want. Try it out. Limiters are awesome. Yeah. We didn't even talk about limiters in individual tracks versus buses versus mix bus. That might have to be another episode. But yeah, dude. Thank you so, so much, Andrew, for joining us. Once again, this episode was brought to you by Natural Audio. Go to natural.audio and go check out the AL1 limiter. I'll put the description and coupon codes, the website and the coupon codes in the description anyway. But go ahead and check that out. At the very least, if it is not because it is objectively better, but it's different enough that it's worth comparing with and making your own decisions and your own conclusions with. So it's awesome. I love it. I personally love it. Thank you so much, Andrew. If there's nothing else to say, hold on, real quick, big shout outs. Natural Audio has Instagram.
Yes. Yeah. Natural.audio. Is where you can find us. Yeah, everything's with basically everywhere, natural.audio. YouTube, I believe, is just Natural Audio. That's where you can find us.
There it is. And on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.